Hello and welcome to El Telejón's La Liga Weekly. Ronald Koeman has finally solved Barca's problems. Just play with 10 men. They were much more entertaining after Frankie de Jong had been sent off and they could reduce the squad size and therefore the wage bill. I mean, as if there's a crisis anyway. Draws with Granada and Cadiz this week have seen them continue their unbeaten start in La Liga. They're only a point behind Rayo Vallecano and you lot are all getting excited about them. Okay, Real Madrid fans, we'll have a quiet conversation about 6-1 and you being top of the league, but no rubbing it in. Okay, it's a sensitive time for other people. 21 goals from 6 games, top of La Liga, after I had weirdos on Twitter shouting at me because I said they didn't need to spend 200 million on Mbappe. Atleti are 2 points further back, unbeaten in 6 games, 14 points, somehow with a goal difference of just +4. That's what you call suffering. It was hard work against Getafe. Obviously. Now, Diego, if you hate Renan Lodi that much, just don't pick him. And we'll have a look at all of the La Liga action from midweek. Terry Gibson was at the Camp Nou on Monday night to see Barca hit balls up to the big lad up front and play off him. It was like the good old days. If only
Big Lens
was there. Yes. If only Vinny was there setting fire to someone's underpants. Barcelona would have brought back memories of the crazy gang. Do you want to start with Barcelona, or do you want to start with Real Madrid? It is very contrasting feelings at the moment.
Real Madrid is everything in the garden is roses. And
let's start with them. Yeah, so let's start with Real Madrid. So this long array at the start of the season, I do remember saying that's quite a long list of decent players they've got up front if they're all fit. Yeah. And obviously, one of those is Asensio. He pops along and bang, here he goes, off and running with a hat trick.
Exactly.
That's a lot of goals, entertaining football, guys who we hadn't seen much of, looking good. It's looking very positive at the moment, isn't it?
It's looking very Ancelotti, isn't it? Mm. He's come in, hasn't made too many drastic changes, hasn't done or said anything controversial, and is getting the best out of a very talented squad of creative attacking players. I like Ancelotti, I have to be honest. I've always had respect for him, player, initially, and the job he's done as a manager. I like the way he goes about his business, minimum fuss. And this year, he's coming up with some really interesting sound bites in his press conferences. He's actually going into great detail. I'll look a few up for a future podcast, but when people ask the normal traditional questions, he's coming up with stuff that we don't normally hear. For instance, the other night, I used one, and I'll try and find some more for another podcast when we haven't got as many games to cover. He said the other night about Nacho was a pessimistic defender. So I thought, is that criticism? And it wasn't. It was praise. And he explained what he meant by a pessimistic defender. He said, I like him being pessimistic. Some defenders are pessimistic, some are optimistic. A pessimistic defender always thinks the worst is going to happen, whereas an optimistic defender believes that his team are not going to give the ball away and stuff like that. So he said, I like pessimistic defenders that are always waiting for an accident and think the worst.
Are defenders generally by nature more pessimistic people than attackers?
Don't know now.
Yeah.
I think they probably were.
As in, something's bound to go wrong. Let's get ready for something going wrong. That's the pessimist view of the world. Yes. Whereas the optimist is, it'll all be fine. Let's go. Yep. So, yeah.
And like the Mallorca first goal.
Mm. Yeah.
Where Gaia controls, slips. None of the defenders were pessimistic. They're all optimistic. Yeah. There was no one about, and Benzema just runs through, and Holmes are scoring in the third minute against a severely weakened Mallorca by injuries. I think three of the back four were fullbacks. They had the problem at the weekend as well. And then Luis Garcia Plaza decides that the next game against home to Osasuna is more winnable. So left out a lot of his first choice players. So that was a pessimistic manager who's thinking optimistic for the next game. So after 3 minutes, a young player making his debut makes a mistake. And Benzema opens the scoring, and from then on, it was so easy for Real Madrid. But I'll look at some of those other quotes that Ancelotti's coming up with to explain his tactical choices, his team selection. He's not just fobbing us off with the usual standard cliche stuff we get from managers, and it's really good. So if anyone's listening, try and have a look and the, you know, this season as it progresses to see what Ancelotti is saying, because it's really informative, to be honest, on how he works. So that's why I'm giving praise to Ancelotti. I think he's doing an excellent job. Asensio was Asensio. I mean, we all know he's got talent, and we are surprised. We have been surprised he hasn't been used more this season. But as you said in the opener, there's a fantastic array of talent there at Real Madrid in those attacking positions. And I class Asensio as an attacker, and he might be a midfield player. He might be a player that plays wide, but he's just a very, very good footballer that's found it hard to get a game. Camavinga comes in, none of the usual midfield players, and they were far too strong for Mallorca. 6-1 actually flattered Mallorca in the end. I mean, the goalkeeper, Manolo Rey, they played well and kept out more chances. Isco gets amongst the goals as well, and Benzema with another two. So a good night's work for Real Madrid, and so far, good work throughout the season.
Right, that'll do us now. We like to dwell on misery, don't we? So we'll move on from Real Madrid.
Who should we go to then?
Well, no, let's go to Atleti. Let's go to But let's go to Atleti, who, as I say, only 2 points further back, but somehow, oh my goodness me, it is hard work watching them play games sometimes, isn't it? So they were behind. Oblak suddenly got into a flap, didn't he? Which is very much unlike him. Suddenly made like three mistakes in the same goal, but it wasn't, you know, Getafe. It was old Getafe in a way, wasn't it? You know, they were strong, purposeful, no nonsense kind of stuff, as opposed to tinkering around. So it was much better from them, and it went wrong when Aleñu got sent off, didn't it? Because they were winning with 15 minutes to go, weren't they? And they ended up losing. Then they were sloppy, weren't they? In the closing stages, the actual goals that Luis Suarez scored, both of them. You're thinking, why don't you just defend that properly? Because you had been defending properly for the rest of the game.
Exactly. You perfectly explained it there. I think that the Getafe were direct, and Jaime Mata was exceptional. His hold-up play up front, the way he was pinning the defenders and holding the ball up and allowing his teammates to get forward. And he was running the channels. He was working hard. And I always think if your centre-forward plays well, it's because your team are playing well and have got a better chance of success. So many games you see the centre-forwards, will come to Barcelona in a minute, where the ball doesn't stick, there's no threat, there's no out ball, there's no threat from crosses. And Jaime Mata did all of that against his best game I've seen him play for a long, long time. He was really up for the challenge and he caused them problems. And I agree that, it was three mistakes in the space of about 10 seconds, wasn't it, from Oblak? Spilt across, had another chance to catch it and flapped about and dropped it again. And then bizarrely seemed to lose total concentration and lost his position where he was in relation to the goal. And then when the header hits the post, Mitrovic's head hits the post, I actually don't think it's going in. It's going across the goal and probably out. And he turns and half puts a hand to it and then tries to take his hand away because he knows the consequences are he's probably going to push it in the goal, but it was all too late. His form has been great, but he's due a run of bad form. He hasn't had a noticeable one since he's been at Atletico. So that might just refocus his attempts to get back to his best, because they need him to be better. And it was quite uninspiring from Atletico. Suarez must have been close to being brought off. It must have crossed Simeone's mind, because I talked about Jaime Mata, the stuff he did. Suarez didn't do any of that. But then at the back of your mind, if you're Simeone, you're thinking, I need a goal, at least one. Do you leave on a player that does what he proceeded to do in the last 10, 15 minutes of the game? Two chances, two goals, both really good chances, both really good the way he took them. First touch for the first goal and then set himself up for the second. And then the second goal was terrible defending. Hopeful cross into the box from Brasalico. It should have been dealt with. I mean, they switched off for the first goal and just allowed the cross into the box, something they hadn't been doing prior to that. So Mosso, who came on for Simeone's favourite player, Renan Lodi. But I understand the frustration with that, because the crossing was awful from Lodi. It was indecisive. Clearly a player that's lacking confidence and probably knows that his manager's not too keen on him. So Hermoso comes on. For the first time in the game, they allowed a player an easy cross. tiredness, I guess, and then Suarez swept it up and scored. So
I think they just made a substitution. And I meant to go back actually and see whether that was it, whether, because it suddenly he just ran, I don't know, 20 yards, didn't he, unimpeded.
Unopposed.
Yeah, yeah.
So and you're right, the tackle from Alenia was absolutely stupid, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Running across the halfway line, chasing a player, not going anywhere in particular, and stamped on the back of his calf.
Yeah.
That was a nasty challenge, which led to them being down to 10 men. And 3 minutes later, Atletico getting the equaliser, then ultimately getting the winning goal. But you're right, they are suffering. There's a lack of rhythm, isn't there, from Atletico Madrid. They really don't. They're playing well until they get to the final third. And then, as I say, Suarez isn't typically causing a threat in behind. He's not holding the ball up. Griezmann, I'm not sure where he's meant to be playing yet. And the different changes that Simeone, makes along the way. It's a little bit of desperation about it all. We're seeing a back three, we're seeing a back four, and, there are injuries to deal with, but the squad is strong enough to deal with any injuries. Lamar and Koke were missing in this game. João Felix suspended. Kondogbia was missing, but the starting 11 and the bench is still really good. So Simeone's got some sorting out to do, to be honest, in terms of how do you get the best out of Suarez, which is clearly he's just a finisher. But how do you work around Suarez while keeping him on the team? Because the hardest job in football is putting the ball in the back of the net. That's what he does well. The other stuff, he's not capable of doing anymore. He's not dynamic enough to run past defenders. He's not particularly great at pinning them anymore. And he's trying to look for a foul as opposed to getting hold of the ball and allowing his teammates to then have time to join up with the attack. But when the ball goes in the penalty area, he comes alive and his technique doesn't let him down. So that's the sort of dilemma that Simeone has to face now. Do you leave Suarez out, risk losing the clear goal scorer that you've got, but you might add other things to the team? Or do you somehow work a system out where basically Suarez becomes the goal hanger?
Isn't it? Because like you've said before, because you think sometimes I look at him and think they should bring him on at the end of a game where you play someone else for the 60th minutes and bring Suarez on for the last half hour when it might have opened up and there might be more chances. But as you said before, that doesn't really suit his fitness, because he is a player who does get a bit better as he plays a run of games, doesn't he? So I'm not sure he's physically suited to coming on for half an hour.
Yeah.
Here and there. So it's another dilemma, isn't it? It's a problem, isn't it? And it's more, if he was just rubbish, it'd be fine. He wouldn't be a problem, would he? You just wouldn't pick him.
It was almost a surprise when he scored and then scored again, because he's forming that game and the other games hasn't led us to believe that he can still do that. But it's just when you give him those half chances, he tucks them away. It's what he does. So it's a nice problem to have when you've got someone that's brilliant at scoring goals, but it's also a problem when it's going to lead to dominating our Atletico lineup in attack. So they've got to come up with a solution for that. Carrasco's a frustrating player as well, brilliant footballer, but don't overdo it when there's crossing opportunities as well. He's playing on the left, he comes in on his right, chops and cuts the ball back, and he's looking to be a defender 2, 3, 4 times before delivering the ball into the box. That can be frustrating for a striker as well. So there's one or two things for Simeone to sort out, clearly. But they're still in. They're going to be in the hunt. They do know how to grind out a win. Late goals have been a theme for them this season. And they've stolen some valuable points in the last minutes of the game. So they're fighting at the moment. They're suffering. But I do expect things to be them to play with a little bit more clarity as the season progresses.
So then let's do Barcelona, shall we? They're not third in the league by any stretch of the imagination, but they have played twice since we last had a conversation, Terry. So the one you were there at the Camp Nou on Monday night, weren't you, for the 1-1 draw with Granada. They went behind early on, Duarte with a goal, and it was Araujo. The player, as I described it, the Barcelona player with the biggest cojones, because he was the one sticking his head in, desperately trying to get on the end of stuff, wasn't he? And then a 0-0 away to Cadiz, which was, I thought it was turgid. I thought it was boring until the red card for Frankie de Jong. And then the end was exciting because both teams are actually trying to win it. Hence, you know, the point that I make in the opening about, it was actually a bit of fun towards the end, but dear me, it's not particularly fun watching Barca at the moment. Do they have to be this bad? Or is this Koeman making them worse than perhaps what he does have? I know the resources aren't what they were, but are they as bad as they look?
Currently, I think they are.
Yeah.
And they probably are. Because if you had the injured players back, then I don't think they would have to be that bad. Hmm. I feel for Koeman, but I don't think he's a good fit. And it's not a question of if, it's when now he goes, and that's clear. Him and Laporta are not united. Koeman is almost being defiant in his management, and he's waiting for the sack. So the sooner the better for everybody, I think, because this is just going to drag on and on and on. But the problem is, I'm led to believe sacking him financially isn't a problem anymore because of the wages that have gone off the bill with Messi and Griezmann in particular. It's finding the right person and finding the right person that wants the job, because at the moment it's not an easy sell, is it, anymore, the Barcelona manager's job. So someone like Conte, for instance, I'd be surprised if he took this job now. So they're having to look around at other names. Xavi is one of them. Pirlo has been mentioned. Roberto Martinez, Eric Ten Hag, Thierry Henry, surprisingly. His name's been linked with a job.
That would be a terrible move. Might as well stick with Koeman.
So I think it's not, as I say, not if, but when. And I think Koeman clearly knows that. Mm-hmm. So hence his defiant press conference the other day when he read a statement out. And getting sent off last night, it's not the end of the world. He'll miss the game against Levante. He'll be in the stands, but... You say, do they have to be this bad? I think when you lose the players they've lost in this summer and the summer before, then you've got injuries like Fati, Dembele, Aguero, Braithwaite, added Alba and Pedri lately, the last couple of games. You have got a problem, whoever's in charge. You know, you're playing Dest at left back, Mingueza at right back, you're playing teenagers left, right and centre. So I think there are reasons, and it is hard to put all of the blame on Koeman. In saying that, I think some of the older players are not particularly playing well. I mean, Memphis started well, but the last couple of games, maybe more than that, hasn't performed as well as he has. I think he might have got carried away a bit with the first couple of games and the goals, and I was in the stadium on Monday, and he was the new idol. You know, the crowd were chanting his name, and then as the game went on and he wasn't delivering, they forgot about him and went on to Araujo, who was like Superman on Monday night. He was superb. Wherever he played, he was coming out of the back with the ball, he was playing, got down the wing and crossed it. He ended up at centre forward and got the equaliser. And I think Memphis just got slightly carried away with the fact that Messi went. Memphis was the new idol of the new camp, and he has to deliver. And he had cracking chance in the closing stages of the game against Cadiz. He didn't really do anything against Granada on the Monday evening. And Koeman was criticised for the Monday game because they had 54 crosses and they ended up with a front line of Piqué, Araujo and Luke de Jong. Araujo scored from a header. Luke de Jong missed an absolute sitter from 5 yards out, which should have been a goal. After 30 minutes in that game, with Barcelona playing the tiki-taka, they were never going to score. It was so slow. It was so predictable. And Granada were just sitting in, letting the ball go wide, defending any cross that come into the box. And then Araujo went forward and stayed forward and had a couple of headers. One was from a corner. One was from an open play where he'd stayed in an attacking position. And that was their best chance of scoring a goal in the first half. So it's logical that Koeman, despite being manager of Barcelona, looks at it and thinks the worst thing happened. We conceded in the first minute. And we haven't threatened the goal since, apart from the centre-half who's gone up. And but the numerous crosses we were having anyway, we suddenly had a threat. So half-time, he brings Luke de Jong on. 75 minutes, he then puts Piqué on straight up front. Piqué never went to centre-half. He just went straight to centre-forward. And they kept ploughing away. And as I say, they scored, they equalised, they should have got a second. And I have to say, the support in the stadium, 27,000, because of COVID, still, you have to sit there and with your mask on throughout the game as well, social distancing and stuff like that. I know there's been criticism from supporters, football fans in the UK who think, oh, look at the rubbish attendances, but it is COVID restricted. I'm not sure many more would have been there on a Monday night, though, against Granada for Barcelona in this current situation. But the supporters in the stadium were fantastic. It was reported there was jeers and whistles. Yes, there was, to Granada.
Right, okay.
Because they were time wasting. That was so the jeers and whistles weren't at Barcelona players. They weren't at Ronald Koeman. The 27,000 supporters were supportive and got behind their team. And I think there's an element of genuine supporters there now. The tourists, people like myself on Monday, are not going to be as prevalent because of COVID and because of no Messi anymore. So you're going to get hardcore Barcelona supporters there, and they were supportive the other night. So to answer your question briefly, I think Barcelona are that bad at the moment.
Yeah.
Too many big players have left the club. The light at the end of the tunnel is the talented youngsters, which is a shining light, I think. And if you get some of those injured players back quickly, or as soon as possible, then I think with some of these youngsters, they'll have more time to blend in, to bed in. But I think there is, I still think there's a bright future for Barcelona, but not with Koeman as manager, not because I think he's a rubbish manager. Yes, it was a strange choice, but we know why he got the job, because of his status at the club as a player. But I just think that the fact that a manager knows he's going, and he's, the president sees him still as Bartomeu's choice, the sooner that is resolved and they move on with someone new, then I think there will be a different outlook at the club, because the supporters, when I was there on Monday, understand the situation. They're having to take their medicine. They're not going to win the Champions League. They're not going to win La Liga this year. But if there's a bright future ahead and a plan, then I think that the supporters are willing to go along with that. But I don't blame Koeman for shoving the big guys up front, because that was the only way they were going to get anything in that game against Granada. The choice is play tiki-taka, play 4-3-3, keep doing what we're doing and get beat. Or do I, a little bit of defiance, do I, go completely against what Barcelona stand for? But my job is to avoid defeat at the very least, get back in the game and get something from this game. So I kind of get the dilemma that he had, and he chose to be obvious. He didn't dress it up. Ended up with Luke de Jong and two centre-halves up front, and it worked.
But, so of all the candidates that they could replace him with, no one's going to want to play that style, are they? No, they're not going to appoint a manager who's good at playing long ball football.
No. I think that was just a one-off. It was a one-off for that game because of the situation. They were losing 1-0 after 1 minute. And it was a logical choice to make, because, as I said, that nothing was happening. Coutinho has been awful. And I'm looking at a player, and I was pretty close. I was on the lower tier, and I was on Coutinho's wing on the down that flank. And it was just the lack of determination and spirit and work rate was quite alarming, I have to be honest, in terms of a player that probably is getting his last opportunity to salvage a career, to be honest. Because not only at Barcelona, if you're another club and you're looking, unless you're getting really cheap wages, you're looking at Philippe Coutinho now and thinking, we can't afford to take the risk of paying a decent transfer fee and huge wages. So you're looking at a relatively young footballer there that should be fighting for his life. And I see Gavi come on at 17, who spirit and, will to win, will to do well, was 10 times more than Coutinho's. And I hate being disparaging about players individually, but I've found it really frustrating. I know he's come back from injury, but you haven't got time to ease yourself in this situation. And he's another game against Cadiz, taken off again without making an impact. It's not an easy situation when you're Koeman and you're down to the bare bones and you think, well, we've got Philippe Coutinho. He used to be good, and he's not. It's a tough ask for any manager to come in now and make a big change until you start getting some of the injured players back. And then, as I say, the young players, I think, will flourish. They've got some really good... Gavi Balde was good in the 30 minutes that he played against Granada. Really impressive. Fatty's still 18. Nico Gonzalez is 19. Demir's showed promise at 18 years of age. Araujo is only 22. You had that with the right type of older pros. Then I think that the future can be bright for Barcelona, but not be Koeman, clearly.
Right, Sevilla 3, Valencia 1. So Valencia, you know, sitting top of the league briefly, weren't they, in the middle of that Real Madrid, well, towards the end of that Real Madrid game when they were winning. They've lost two tough games, so it's not a crisis time for Valencia. But Sevilla started certainly that game very well. The second goal, it's a Lato own goal. What an absolute freakish bounce of the ball that was, though, wasn't it? So a bit of bad luck there.
Yes, and they've given it to Gonzalo Montiel, who's a new signing for 24-year-old Argentine. I think they've paid about 10 million euros for.
Right,
they actually look now as if they've got a bit of cover. Maybe someone to follow on from Jesus Navas. Hmm. And he was in with a cross, wasn't it? Deflected wildly off of Tony Latto. It was a cross from the touchline. Huge deflection, went up. You've got to question the goalkeeper, though. It's Mamardashvili. He's played really well. He came in as third-choice goalkeeper. Two injuries to the first two goalkeepers allowed him to start the season. He's been playing well, but there was a couple of goals in this one I thought he was at fault with. So maybe we'll see a change after these two defeats against two tough teams, of course, Real Madrid and Sevilla. No need for panic from Valencia and Bordalas, but Sevilla blew them away, didn't they, in the early stages. Papu Gomez with the first, Montiel, Tony Latto, I would say an own goal, because Montiel's not shooting a goal. It's not on target. It's a cross that massively looping deflection on it that bounces before it reaches the goalkeeper. And I always wonder why goalkeepers make themselves smaller sometimes. So they crouch down and you're thinking, you know, even I might have got a touch to it. Probably not. As it bounced over his head, Rafa Mir gets his first goal for Sevilla. That'd be a relief to him. So Sevilla are looking good again. And Valencia just got brush it off, hold their nerve and move on to the next game. Just seeing it, who they've got the weekend at home to Athletic Club. So, interesting game.
Well, let's talk about Athletic, or rather the team that beat them, probably more, Rayo Vallecano. So after a bad start to the season, they're flying your way. We talked about Radamel Falcao the other day. What a return, because he got the winning goal late in this game away to Athletic.
I mean, it's an incredible story that he's turned up at Rayo Vallecano. An incredible now in his first two games, barely hardly having any playing time and being so decisive. And I think it was a great goal because he's the only person on the pitch that anticipates the ball going there. There's no other attackers attacking it and no defenders attacking it. It's a set piece from out wide. In the interview after the game, he said, "I told Bebe where to put it." Right. And he put it exactly where I asked him to. That's really polite, Falcao, because Bebe's shooting.
Yeah, like a cannon shot, isn't it? When he took his head off heading that.
And we know that Bebe likes a shot from open play, set pieces, anywhere in the attacking half of the pitch, he'll have a shot. But Falcao knew that in the week or so that he's been at the club, and he was the only one on the move. And as you said, then he took his head off. It was such a powerful shot, cross. Rayo deserved to win that game. They were a better team to go 1-0 up. They were unlucky when Pathesis, who they signed from Fuenlabrada in the summer, second division team, and he's been phenomenal so far.
And he's 27, isn't he? I was thinking, who's this kid coming through?
Exactly.
He
was unlucky on that. He's in that near post zone area from a free kick from Meunier that's being whipped in, and he has to try and get something on it. That's his job, and then unfortunately deflects and towards his own goal and goes back in for Athletic to equalise. Athletic's issue is goals, isn't it, still? Five goals, that was an own goal. Two from central defenders and two from Iñaki Williams in six games. So that's going to hold them back. And Rayo deserved the win in this game. They were really good. I mean, the first goal was a good goal. Sergio Guardiola was excellent on the night. Alvaro Garcia with a fantastic finish. So excellent stuff. And of course, Andoni Iraola returning back to Sam Marmes, fantastic welcome. Didn't celebrate his goals, or a little bit, but not, didn't go overly mad. But I imagine he was punching in his fist in delight in the change room and celebrating with his team. So he was always a good player, respectful player, and he's doing a fine job at Rio. They play good football as well.
Villarreal got a good win, Terry, after that long string of draws. Finally got a win, and an emphatic one against Elche as well, wasn't it, from the off. Alcázar played quite an important role in this, didn't he, in the goals. It's one of these ones where it's a combination. Villarreal played well, and Elche certainly contributed to their own downfall.
Yeah, and Alcázar said struggled for playing time. Bit of a mystery. Certainly, I mean, he didn't score. We have to, you know, say that. They did win 4-1. He didn't score, but he was involved in three of the goals, heavily involved. You know, he did set up the I would say, you know, the huge part of the three goals they scored. And he was such an influence. And he resuscitated Emery's team this season, because they haven't played like that so far this season. He's been behind Gerard Moreno and Dia, who's come into the club and hasn't hit the ground running. Alcázar's been sitting there waiting patiently, I would imagine, getting the ump and showing his frustration. And he took it out on Elche with a wonderful individual performance. And some of the goals are top class as well. Classic VRL goals, aren't they? You know, swift attacking play, one-touch passing, and finished off nicely. And Trigueros amongst the goals again. Jeremy Pino with the first, Trigueros with the second. Dan Juma's contributing, looks a good signing. And Alberto Moreno in the 94th minute on a breakaway, finished his off nicely. I think Alberto Moreno's was the only one that Alcázar wasn't involved in. So excellent display from Villarreal and Paco Alcázar.
Gonzalo Verdú, Terry, spectacular start to the season. Played five, yellow cards five. Full house so far.
Takes some doing.
Yeah, doesn't it? Yeah,
we didn't mention the sending off last, Frankie de Jong, did we?
Oh, yes. Yeah, so yeah, let's go on then. Is that... Yeah, go on, tell us what you...
I'm talking about refereeing, one or two refereeing incidents. We talked about Joao Felix. I think it's the same referee as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, and the first one was similar to the Joao Felix one, wasn't it? De Jong was being held back and the referee claimed he threw an arm out and gave him a yellow card. So the same punishment as Joao Felix. And then minutes later, he goes in for the challenge. People are saying he's silly on the second yellow, but surely you've got to... You can't take away that competitive nature of the game for every player that's ever picks up a yellow card by saying, therefore, for the rest of the game, do not make a challenge. That's pointless. Take them off.
Yeah.
And that shouldn't be the way of the game. A foul isn't necessarily always a yellow. And in this case, Frankie de Jong wasn't even a foul.
No. It's purely because because he took off for a second, is that automatic? Is that the yellow card now? Because he got to the ball first, didn't he? So he got to the ball.
And then pulled his foot away.
Yeah. And then there is contact, because it's two players trying to win the ball.
Exactly.
But so it was when he went up in the air, so very briefly, he is out of control, in inverted commas. So is that, I think that's the referee's interpretation, isn't it? That because he was briefly up in the air, I have to show him the yellow card. I think that's, but that's it, isn't it?
The controversy has to come about with the VAR as well. They're not allowed to look at that.
Yeah, because they can't do yellow cards.
Because it's second yellow. Yeah. Can't do yellow cards.
Yeah.
If we're using a common sense approach, then the consequences of a team, any team, not just this game, being down to 10 men because of a wrong decision, then that is silly from the lawmakers. I think it should be looked and overturned and saying, no, it's not a yellow card. It stays on the pitch, 11-11. Because I'm sure VAR would have looked at that and realised, no, it's a mistake. So if we're going to try and rectify every mistake that's made by an official, we can't pick and choose and say, oh, you can't do yellow cards. We should be able to. So that was a big call, I think. And every yellow card? No, probably I would say the second yellow, if it's controversial, if it's debatable, should be looked at. Not every yellow card, because we'd be, how long would that take?
Yeah, it's long enough anyway. They do them too slowly anyway, don't they? So
yeah.
Right, let's rattle through the rest. It's actually a good round of games, isn't it? Loads of goals. The goals per game rate has shot back up somewhere healthier after this round of games. Yeah. It's only really Barca Cadiz let us down at the end. So let's pick out a few of them. Real Sociedad, a 3-2 win away to Granada. Entertaining stuff. And a double for Arif Elostondo, which is a rarity.
Exactly. And two really good goals. He's a centre-back. So, you know, he might score the header from a corner. But these were two really good finishes. And Real Sociedad have been excellent. They lost the first game of the season at Barcelona. Since then, they've drawn one and won the rest. And sitting nicely in third place. I've got injury issues as well, but managed to soldier on through that as well. And playing good football, scoring goals, winning games of football. Pressure on Granada, Robert Moreno. 3 points, no wins, despite the good performance at Barcelona. And he's finding himself coming in for criticism because the shadow of Diego Martinez and what he achieved at Granada is weighing heavily on that club at the moment. So Moreno desperately needs a result or two to go his way. Might come at the weekend. They're away from home against Celta Vigo. Should be competitive, but Celta picked up their first win of the season and fully deserved as well, to pull the pressure likewise on Paco Lopez at Levante.
Yeah, Levante.
Dissent from the home supporters there as well.
Yeah, it's a bit harsh on him, isn't it? But
well, it isn't, because I think they only won 1 in 13 at the end of last season. Mm-hmm. And then you go into this season and you're still waiting for your first win. You've had 4 draws, no wins. No wonder the frustration is slightly spilling over. You wonder what the Levante supporters expect. They've got a nice, newly built, refurbished stadium. They think they should be higher than where they finished last year. I think it was 14th, 15th, which I tend to agree with. But, you know, are they believing they can get into Europe and stuff like that? I don't know. But at the moment, they're finding themselves towards the wrong end of the division.
People get bored of managers, don't they?
Yeah, and players.
And there's an element of it because players get bored of the manager. And so, therefore, sometimes you do have to change managers in that situation. But it's obviously very much a careful what you wish for situation with a manager.
Yeah.
In this situation, he's done a good job there. Over a number of years, they're an entertaining team to watch. They're Levante. Are they going to have a bad spell? Yeah.
So. Thankfully, they've got Barcelona at the weekend, away from home.
right, there's a couple more games, which are... So, Osasuna 1, Betis 3. It's another entertaining one, wasn't it? Because it looks, you know, looks more comfortable for Betis, doesn't it? A lovely late goal, you know, beautifully constructed.
Yes.
The ball through and the finish by Willian Jose. Right, a rare goal for him. So good result for Betis. That was no way.
It's been a good little run of form, actually, after I criticised them.
Yeah.
They've turned it around, got the win in Europe as well, and picking up wins in La Liga, moving up the table and look much better. They look more like the Betis from last season. Good to watch, end product. And William Jose, looking to get his career back on track, has had a decent start at Real Betis. Won me as well amongst the goals. And Kike Hermoso, who's a 22-year-old centre-back on his debut, played well and took his goal well. And that is one of the areas of the pitch where Betis have needed strengthening, to be honest. So I'm surprised at the age of 22 it's taken him that long to get to his debut. But good start to his career for him in the top division with a top-class club. So, no, Betis are moving along nicely now.
And last game, then Espanyol get a win. 1-0 against Alaves, who haven't even got a point. RDT with a penalty for a handball.
Yeah, tough, harsh decision as well. One of those where it hits the player from point-blank range who's trying to block a shot. The arm wasn't obviously stretched out, but it's down by his side and strikes the arm, and RDT takes and gets the pen. Alaves, I thought it was their best performance of the season, Alaves. And on reflection of the game, I actually thought they deserved something out of this, but tough for Calleja. No points, goals against 11, goals for 1. They have only played 5 instead of 6, but it's hard to put a positive spin on it. But they were better in this game, so perhaps that was, you know, might go some way to give them a tiny little bit of confidence. Just looked at their game at the weekend.
They got
tough. Home to Atletico.
Right, okay.
Yeah, well, it'll be close, whatever.
Yeah.
Only one goal in it.
It'll be 0-0 at half time. 0-0 at half time is my prediction of that game of the weekend.
Right. So that is, so what that'll do is for now. So the weekend, big games, Real Madrid home to Villarreal, Barcelona home to Levante. They're all big games in La Liga, of course, and we'll be looking back at them all next week. There's a Monday night game, so we'll do either Monday or Tuesday next week. So we'll be back for everybody next week, and then obviously I think we are definitely into a round of European games, so we'll be back for Patreons only after that. And we'll see you all. Thanks for listening. Take care, everybody.